And it's not about, they appreciate the reiteration, the echoing of, it's not about being the best doctor in the world anymore. It's about being the best doctor for the world, for your patients. It really takes the pressure a little bit from a mental health perspective to say, I got the world on my shoulders every time I wake up. I got compounding pressure from administration, whatever it might be. And it just puts it down for a minute and says, you know what? I don't need to be an expert in all areas, but what I need to be an expert in is my patients. And I need to show them that I am for them. And I want to create a remarkable environment.
That's Michael Tatro, and this is Healthcare Confidential. I'm your host, Teresa Jacob Ellis, talking with innovators and experts about health and healthcare in America. Michael Tatro is a well-known author, speaker, and brand strategist. He's the editor-in-chief of the industry trade publication Concierge Medicine Today. He co-authored the industry's best-selling book, The Doctor's Guide to Concierge Medicine, and he's the weekly host of the Docpreneur Leadership Podcast, where he interviews physicians and docpreneurs. Breaking publishing records over the years, his books are industry bestsellers, referenced in medical college classrooms and journals. Michael, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you do an awful lot of work with doctors. You're an advocate for physicians, yet you yourself are not a physician. How did you become so passionate about the issues that are affecting doctors today?
Well, years ago, a wonderful lady named Catherine Sykes and I are working together still. And we were introduced to this concept called concierge medicine years ago, probably in 2005, by a good friend of ours. And he said, I got one of these letters, and we started researching it. And we really just fell in love with the community of doctors, what it was all about, and how it was impacting patient care, and how it was really, truly bringing the patient and physician closer together.
Can you tell us what concierge medicine is, in case people are not familiar with the concept? I think most people are, but let's hear the definition.
Sure. So I usually describe it through a metaphor, which is you have Amazon Prime, and you have Netflix, and you have to have internet in order to make those work. And the internet would be like your health insurance for catastrophic car accidents, you know, hospitalizations, cancer, those types of things, specialist visits. And but if you want to use your subscription-based program, which would be usually through a concierge medicine doctor, something like an Amazon Prime that we're all used to, that is usually a primary care physician or a family medical doctor. They're moving in, branching into specialties as well. But you pay a subscription for the services of that doctor through that practice. And underneath that subscription, you have a certain amount of services that that doctor lays out in the contract with you that you pay an annual fee for. And those fees usually range from anywhere from about $1,500 to maybe $3,500 on average. There's highs and lows, like any subscription, but it depends on the amount of services that you want offered in that contract. It is not a form of insurance.
And so you mentioned that you first heard of this about 15 or 16 years ago. What's the history of this practice model?
So it started in the mid 90s, and it probably, if you were to look at what the true definition of a subscription healthcare and membership medicine is, it really kind of goes back to the days of, you know, the 30s and the 40s and the 1950s, where a doctor would come to your home, to your bedside to see you. And that truly is the effervescence, the spirit of what concierge medicine is. But it really kind of moved into its own place, its modern day form in the mid 90s. And it kind of started on the West Coast and also in the branches of the East Coast later on, and then just kind of developed and moved into the rest of the country. And doctors started paying attention to it. Patients really started paying attention to it. And like I say to all of our physicians who we interview or we talk to on a regular basis, I am not a physician, but I am a patient. So I know what it's like to sit on the other side of you. Guys, gals, it is not pleasant. And the data is backing that up.
It almost feels like this is a direct kind of backlash to what's been happening in medicine over the the previous decades where that there's been an erosion in that doctor-patient direct relationship.
Absolutely. There has been a number of, you know, we receive at CMT, concierge medicine today.org, we receive a number of, we have a doc finder on there. And on that doc finder, you can go and search for a position like this in your state. And we ask them a series of questions, those prospective patients, those people outside the four walls of where you and I are right now in our communities who are looking for new doctors. And they're saying over 8 out of every 10 of them are saying, you know what, I'm looking for a new doctor. I'm leaving my current doctor because he or she spent less than 15 minutes with me. They asked me less than 5 questions. In many cases, they've known them. They've been going to that doctor's office for years, and the doctor still has to look at a medical chart to remember their name. So it's not an adversarial relationship between patient and physician. It's just the patients aren't getting served in the way that they need and desire and want. And we're starting to, when you become older, like I am, and I got a bunch of kids too, you know, you become older, you develop more chronic conditions, you need more time and attention from your doctor. And we're just not getting that in today's healthcare culture.
And just to be clear, patients who choose to engage with a physician in this way still need to have health insurance. As you pointed out, you still need internet service, right, for that catastrophic episode.
Correct. Yes, it is. It is something that this is usually a subscription that is laid out very clearly. It's you know, each doctor does his own contract, or maybe they're a part of a group that does this that has helped them move from a traditional plan reimbursed model into more of a subscription-based healthcare delivery model. So they're compliant with their state laws, their Medicare and insurance laws, their, you know, all those types of things. So these are just relationships that patients and doctors have with each other, with the practice and the patient, that just it lays out in contractual form, here's what we do, and here's what you'll get in return for the subscription. And, you know, we understand when we sign a contract and when we become a member, you know, you can terminate that contract too if you don't like it. But the retention rates at a lot of these practices are in the mid-90s to high 90s. And I don't know, you know, if you were to rate your doctor over the last year or 2 years, you know, what your satisfaction score would be with that practice. But I'm kind of doubting that most people would probably not rank their doctor's office and the visits and the time and attention that they're getting right now. I'm willing to gander that they're not putting them in the 90 percentiles, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. I want to ask you about another term that I saw on your website, which is direct primary care. Is there a difference between concierge medicine and direct primary care?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yes, there is a difference between DPC, which is the abbreviation for that, in concierge medicine. Typically, your direct primary care practice does not participate in insurance, and it does not participate in Medicare. So that doctor has decided to opt out of Medicare and not participate in any of the local or state insurance plans. And so that price point is also much more palatable for a younger demographic of patients. Typically, you have a lot of patients, I would say probably 60 to 80% of those patients, according to our data at the DPC Journal and CMT over the past decade or so, our data says that those patient demographics for a DPC practice are usually in their 20s to mid 40s. Now, you will have patients that have been in a DPC practice within the 50s and 60s and 80s and so on. But when you price a service or a product at a certain price, usually under $99 or less is what a DPC practice is. And it's a month to month. So it's almost like your Netflix subscription where it's just paid month to month. It's not an annual fee. Usually behavioral psychology and consumer psychology tells us that when you price point something at a certain level, you also attract a certain customer. And so, you know, right now, younger patients don't necessarily have that long-term value, relational value. They don't see the value. You know, your 25-year-old, you know, something out of college is just going to say, I'm pretty healthy. I don't really need to see a doc until I get the flu. And so they might sign up for a couple of months, or they might sign up for 4 or 5 months and then just decide, what am I paying this for? I don't need to see a doc. I haven't seen this guy or gal in months. So they cancel the subscription. That does happen. It's pretty rare. But those doctors also have great relationships with their patients too. And it's just a matter of the services offered underneath that contract are maybe a bit different than what you see under a concierge medicine contract. It's maybe a little more robust.
Interesting. Okay. So now with both of these models, are they only for primary care providers? Are we seeing any specialists get in on this type of arrangement?
Yeah, that's another great question. We see actually in the last few years, probably the last 5 to 7 years, we've seen a number of specialists move into this space in the subscription-based healthcare delivery space, especially the concierge medicine space. And that is because when you have that, when you have a patient that needs and requires, it's not just a one-off patient where you come and you get surgery and then you never see the surgeon again, other than a follow-up appointment. You know, when you have to go see that physical therapist for a long time, or you have to go see that podiatrist because you have chronic foot problems, we're seeing cardiologists move into this. We're seeing dentists move into this. We're seeing podiatrists, pediatrics move into concierge medicine. But I would say that you're probably looking at about every 6 or 7 out of every 10 are going to be family medicine or internal medicine. And the other 3 to 4 out of every 10 are going to be in your specialists. And that is a big change in the last big swing in the last few years where, you know, 5 years ago, I was having the same conversation. You asked the same question. It was probably 1 out of every 10, maybe 2 5 years ago was a specialist. So it's really changed in a great way for patients and doctors.
Fascinating, Michael. So what do you think is driving that shift?
I think consumers are, it's twofold. You've got physicians and physician fatigue and physician, you know, the moral injury, the burnout, the fatigue. And, you know, I saw a post from a physician just this morning saying, you know, let's honor our janitorial workers in the hospital and, you know, continue, you know, not just do all this physician and nurse hero worship. And I think that was a great post by a physician, and I'd like to see more of that. But I think that you've got so many physicians who are burned out, fatigued, and they're all at different stages of burnout. You've got some that just, they recognize right now that like, we're doing good work, but I just don't think I can keep up the sustainable pace. And then you got some in the middle who are like, it's been a rough few years. Like I've been doing this for 10 years and I can't keep up this pace. And I'm kind of thinking that I need to switch jobs, but I just don't know what my options are. And then you got those who are maybe in their later forms of their career, probably in their 50s, late 40s, maybe even 50s and 60s, who are physicians saying, I've been there. I've done that. I have spent the money in places I shouldn't have. You know, I have been burned by bureaucracy. I'm tired of the administrative headaches. And I just can't do this anymore. I had one doctor, he said, I'm going to go help my wife pursue her dream, which is becoming a florist. And I'm going to be her VP of operations and release his medical degree. And we can't afford to lose more doctors. We need more great doctors leaning into their giftings and put in a position where they're able to enjoy coming to work on Monday morning so that they don't look at their practice or the exam room as a penalty box. That's one reason. The other reason is patients. Patient fatigue has set in. And I know that for many physicians may be listening that, you know, the idea of an RN or a PA or an FNP, you know, serving patients in our communities and retail healthcare clinics is, you know, a bit of it creates this tension or this rub. You kind of sit up straight a little bit more and like that just doesn't sit well with me. Well, patients have found that those providers in their communities are close. You know, they can get in and see them pretty easily, and they're usually willing to listen to those patients more often. And when you have over 8, and the data backs this up, when you have over 8 out of every 10 patients who are looking for a new doctor saying, yeah, if my doctor's office closed at the end of the week, really wouldn't matter to me. Why? Because he or she spent less than 15 minutes with me and he or she asked me less than 5 questions. And I haven't really had a great relationship with that office, the staff, or the physician. And so I'm fatigued too. And there's a heck of a lot more patients who are fatigued than there are physicians. And that's not to say we are 4 doctors. We say all the time, we are 4 doctors. And it's not about being the best doctor in the world anymore. It's about being the best doctor for the world, for your patients, and for your local community. But we have to understand, if you're in a place where you can make a change, be in a place where you can recognize uniquely better. I heard somebody say that on a leadership podcast a few months ago. We want physicians to be in a place where they can recognize uniquely better. And I think that many of them are coming to that realization that they got to do something different because they can't keep up this pace. And they want to, I've never met an unempathetic physician that just doesn't want to help people. And I love that about them. But patients are fatigued too.
Yeah, I think you tapped into a lot of what's happening on both sides of the exam table. And I just want to circle back to one thing that you kind of slipped in with what you just said, which was something about moral injury. And you talk a lot about physician burnout. But what do you mean by that term, moral injury? And how pervasive do you think this is if we look at the universe of practicing physicians right now?
So I've heard that term in the last few years, and that I've, you know, in talking with many physicians and being in the world of publishing and writing, I read what other folks are saying about, you know, physician burnout. And I hear this word moral injury kind of as this new term to replace the word physician burnout. And, you know, it's not moral to treat physicians. I was talking with one today. He is married to medicine. He's married to a physician, and he himself is in the business side. And he said, you know, the way that physicians are treated, they're treated to be like 6 inches tall, and they're not treated very well. And the profession that's teaching them while aging out in medical schools is, you know, trying to catch them doing something wrong and making these doctors feel like they're 6 inches tall, he said. But, you know, then they're thrown out of medical school with all of this debt and in their specialty. And, you know, they are not getting the business courses. They're not getting the leadership, you know, instruction. They're being matched up with hospitals or, you know, clinics in their area that are now putting impossible pressure on them every single morning. And that is a tough, sustainable pace. And it's, I think, morally, for a lot of folks who live and breathe this every day, like I said, I'm not a physician, but I am a patient. And I know what it's like to sit on the other side of that. And it's tough too. But from that moral injury perspective, we've got to do something different than just give the platitudes and make physicians feel like they're not alone in these medical conferences and these associations and, you know, these podcasts and stuff where we talk about physician burnout, but we just say, well, you're not alone. Well, that's part of it. That's the beginning step. But a physician listening's now got to say, okay, I understand I'm not alone, but what's next? I've got to be, that physician has to be ready to take the next step. And then he's got to be observant and find the knowledge base and tune into and recognize what it is that will take him from good or a not so good position or station in life or position or job to the next station in life, which is be in a position to recognize uniquely better so that when it comes along, you understand, you know what? That's it. That's going to make all the difference between my relationship with my patients and their relationship with me. And that's going to really change our communities.
Well, we're going to talk more about this and maybe move into a more positive now that you've so articulately outlined what some of the struggles are. Let's talk when we come back from the break about what doctors can do to kind of make that shift. So don't go away. We'll be right back with more with editor and publisher Michael Tatro.
Healthcare Confidential is brought to you by Prescriptive Communications, LLC. Analyze, strategize, connect. That's our prescription for healthcare marketing. Prescriptive Communications puts healthcare businesses in front of the audiences they need to reach. If you're ready for a diagnostic on your marketing efforts, get in touch with Prescriptive today. Call us at 631-606-0525 or visit prxcommunications.com. That's 631-606-0525 or prxcommunications.com.
Welcome back to Healthcare Confidential. We're here with Michael Tatro, Editor-in-Chief of Concierge Medicine Today. And we were talking just before the break about some of the challenges and struggles that many physicians are facing. I'm sure, Michael, that you've noticed that things have gotten only more challenging, I'm sure, during the pandemic. Has that been a factor, do you think, for practicing doctors?
I think for those outside of the subscription-based delivery, healthcare delivery model, it's a challenge. And then it has absolutely, it's not to say that those doctors have had all great lives and great practices within a concierge medicine or DPC model. They have had their share of struggles and challenges as well. But the data is what I'm referring to when I make that statement. The data says, I think it was according to Castle Connolly Private Health Partners, they did a survey. I think it was published in Medical Economics in spring of 2021 here, where they surveyed membership medicine, subscription, and concierge medicine models and found that none of them closed their doors during the pandemic so far. And I think that that's a big testament to what this healthcare delivery vehicle, and it's not the only delivery vehicle by any means. There are plenty of other great doctors, great practices who are doing great things. I'm not a evangelistic about this model by any means, or the DPC model. I think that you have to recognize that there are great doctors who love practicing in their pathway, in their lane, as in a hospital, and that's what they're built for. And they understand that and they get it. However, if you're struggling to find career satisfaction and you've said, you know what, I closed my practice last June, or I'm about to close the practice because I can't make it work. I had one person that I spoke with a couple of months ago. He said, I scheduled an appointment with that doctor's office 3 weeks earlier, and I went to show up for my appointment and the office was empty. I mean, no furniture. And there was a sign on the door that says, sorry, we closed. Please call this number. And yeah, that's what's happening all across the country. You know, doctor's offices are closing. And so we're starting to see that the data out of the subscription-based and particularly concierge medicine model, and even in some DPC practices, that the model is proving itself out as years go by.
And that's a remarkable statistic that none of them have closed, because we've seen, I don't remember exactly what the percentage is, but it's been a significant number of other practices that have, as your story illustrated, your anecdote, have closed. Hopefully more, they've done not just closed and not told their patients and had people show up for appointments.
And I'm not sure what the sample size of that survey was, but I know that they did a great job on it, the folks over there at Castle Connolly Private Health Partners. But I would definitely, and you can go to conciergemedicinetoday.org or .com to read about it. We published the survey and linked to Medical Economics and CCPHP. But I'm sure if the sample size was, you know, global or, you know, super, super big, you know, I'm sure you would find one or two or five, I don't know. But, you know, for the most part, I think that that's a resounding clarion call for anybody, for any physician out there to say, you know what, maybe I should, I'm now in a position to recognize uniquely better. And that might be a uniquely better model that I could go after, because there is somebody always innovating. And somebody's going to come out with a new version of concierge medicine, a new version of DPC, and it's going to rock the boat. It's going to rock our culture. It's going to rock the patients as well. Retail healthcare, for example, competes directly with the direct primary care community because of its young patient demographics, its rural attraction, and its suburban attraction.
So I want to ask you about some other tools. What are some other tools that physicians can tap into to help them deal with some of their challenges?
I think number one is recognizing what are you like on Monday morning? Are you excited? You know, that's one of the first thermometer things I take a temperature on when I talk with doctors is, how do you like going into your practice? Do you like your staff? Do you like your patients? Do you enjoy going to work on Monday morning? And if you look at your practice, if you look at the exam room as, you know, a penalty box, then it's time for you to explore some other options and get an unofficial MBA in what your options are. Should you explore, you know, another, you know, an MBA degree and be in medical legal or be in medical legal consulting? Or should you retire early? Or should you move? Or should you maybe you like the culture, but the job is just too demanding? You need to be in a position to recognize uniquely better. And I think that if you don't like your job when you approach it on Monday morning, when and it just exhausts you, you know, then it's time to start not always just asking your peers, what should I do? Because they got the same business expertise. They got the lack of five credit. They got the benefit of five credit hours in medical school that you did. So they're lacking from the same medical business acumen that you are. However, you know, reading books is a good start. That's a start small. You know, reading some books about leadership, reading some books about self-improvement. We find that the concierge medicine physicians in particular read or stream four to six books per month. And 80% of those books are about leadership and leading others well. And the other 20% are about medical journals and things that they're really interested in or intrigued in. The other thing I think I would start with is, you know, just looking at how often do you send out, start simple, how often do you send out a thank you note to a patient? When was the last time you sent a thank you note handwritten, not just like buy a card, sign your name? That doesn't count. That's a nice gesture, but it still is pretty meaningless in the big scheme of things.
How often have you gotten one from your doctor? I never have.
Exactly. So last year we started a thank you note campaign at the beginning of the pandemic, and we wrote over 500 individual handwritten thank you notes. I wrote to physicians that were, you know, that I knew personally over the years, and we sent them an individually wrapped sleep mask. And one of the physicians, we sent all these handwritten notes out, and I think to date I've probably handwritten over 2,000. Handwritten note cards in the last year and a half to physicians. And I've gotten responses back, not from all of them, of course. I expect them to be busy. I don't expect notes at all. But we got back, you know, some handwritten notes, letters typed, you know, from the physician that were from Alaska, from the United Kingdom, from Australia, from California to New York, Texas. And these doctors were just so appreciative that we were their cheerleader and essentially just saying, look, we are for you. We are for doctors. And it's not about, they appreciate the reiteration, the echoing of, it's not about being the best doctor in the world anymore. It's about being the best doctor for the world, for your patients. It really takes the pressure a little bit from a mental health perspective to say, I got the world on my shoulders every time I wake up. I got compounding pressure from administration, whatever it might be. And it just puts it down for a minute and says, you know what? I don't need to be an expert in all areas, but what I need to be an expert in is my patients. And I need to show them that I am for them. And I want to create a remarkable environment, because if all physicians listening say, well, you know, the number one way I grow my practice is word of mouth and patient referral. Okay, well, if that's true, which we know according to the data and, you know, experience will tell us that that's not all true, because a lot of things went into building that reputation to get that patient to walk in the door. But if that truly is how you feel, that word of mouth, patient referrals is how you grow your practice, there's not enough doctors right now doing a wonderful job of creating a remarkable environment that then creates this memorable environment for patients that then gives the patient, when they leave that practice and leave your office, and say, you know what, I'm going to tell like 10, 15 people about that doctor, like they spent like an hour with me. And I've never had that happen. Usually it's the opposite. We get around our friends and family and the subject of healthcare comes up and it's like, you know, you just won't believe the last visit I had. And it's like, well, you think that one was bad? Let me tell you about mine. You know, that's typically the conversation that's had around the kitchen island or the dinner table when the subject of healthcare comes up. But I think that doctors can really look at, you know, some small tangible handles that are portable, memorable, and simple. And I think thank you notes and gratitude, whether it's to their staff or to their patients. There's one doctor, he budgets $700 a year, no joke, in South Carolina, to buy $5 Starbucks cards with that $700. And every time a new patient is referred, he sends a current patient a $5 or $10 Starbucks gift card with a handwritten note and says, hey, Jane Smith, I just want to thank you for sending over John Doe. It meant the world to me that you trust me with your care, and I hope that you enjoy this a small cup of coffee on me.
That's great marketing. That sounds like a really smart guy. And what I want to do now is ask you if you wouldn't mind sharing with our listeners a little bit of information about your event that's coming up in October, the Concierge Medicine Forum.
Yeah. So as the industry healthcare trade publication for concierge medicine, we are hosting we host every year an annual conference called the Concierge Medicine Forum. And it's right here in Atlanta this year in 2021. It's October 21 through 23. We have a pre-conference workshop that's going to cover all of the membership medicine models, subscription healthcare delivery models that you might have heard about, whether it's DPC, concierge medicine, whether it's a hybrid approach. You'll hear from the experts. You're not just going to hear from me. In fact, I take a back seat because you get to hear from me all year long. I take a back seat and let the heroes, the experts, the physicians themselves as well tell their stories. It's also a place where we unpack a lot of the logistics of these practices. If you're retiring and leaving the practice of medicine, you know, this is an opportunity for you to explore, you know, how do I value my practice? Like, maybe I'm not in this space, but I'm getting ready to sell my practice or hire an associate. How do I leave the practice of medicine well? We're also exploring precision medicine, genomics, whole genome sequencing, pharmacy, pharmacogenomics, cancer innovation, and cancer testing is a big deal this year. So is hyperbaric chambers with Aviv Clinics. We got Signature MD coming that's going to be speaking, Mark Murison. We've got Castle Connolly Private Health Partners with Dr. Dean McElwain. Dr. Shai Afradi from Aviv Clinics is going to be our keynote on October 22. And Special Docs Consultants is going to be talking over lunch on Friday. We've just got a really amazing lineup of almost 40 speakers. And this is an event where I had a physician last year, two examples. You can go to conciergemedicineforum.com or conciergemedicinetoday.org and check it out. You can check out all of our books at docpreneurpress.org. That's docpreneurpress.org. A lot of courses, a lot of books there. But two stories. One doctor said, you know, Michael came to me on Friday evening at the reception. He said, I was so intimidated when I walked in here this morning and I heard all of these speakers and I saw what was going to be on the program and schedule. But I feel like I can go back to my island all by myself and walk into the exam room on Monday morning and I won't feel like I'm by myself anymore. I feel like I've got folks I can call at a moment's notice. I just developed so many good friendships that I feel like are going to last. And he followed up just a few weeks ago and said, yeah, it's still working. I love what I do. And I moved into concierge medicine and it's just been the best thing. It's saved my practice. It saved my staff. And I've even heard from some doctors who have said it saved their marriage too. The second story, older physician, probably getting ready to retire soon. And he said, you know, Michael, I've been to these medical conferences, you know, for 40 years all over the world. And this is the best one I've ever been to. And so for us, that means a lot because that means that we are truly living out our mission and vision, which is to be for doctors.
That's fantastic. And Michael Tatro, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us today and sharing all of this fantastic information. If you don't mind, just give your website, your URL again, so listeners know where they can go to learn more.
Sure. So our trade publication is a daily, multiple times per day. Our e-journals go out to over 60,000 physicians. You can go to conciergemedicinetoday.org to subscribe. It's free. Go check it out, conciergemedicinetoday.org. You can go to the DPC Journal, either dpcjournal.com or directprimarycare.com. Check out our DPC Journal. We also are the American Journal of Retail Medicine.com. We also evaluate what's happening in the retail medicine world. But our annual conference is conciergemedicineforum.org or .com.
Excellent. And thank you again for being here.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
And I want to remind our listeners that new Healthcare Confidential episodes are available every Monday morning wherever you access podcasts. The show is brought to you by Prescriptive Studios and is hosted on Omni Studio. Our theme song is an original composition written and performed by Patrick Pekarsik. Our production assistant is John Roy. Views expressed on the show are solely those of the host and guest and do not reflect any other entity. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and leave us your feedback and help us continue the conversation by dropping a note on the Healthcare Confidential Facebook page. Stay well, everyone.